It's Thursday, July 30th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. I want to give thanks to everyone out there who's getting so involved with the El Jefe Hot Wings Eating Contest that Herb Age Design has sponsored me in, and getting a lot of fun emails from folks at stash@normal.org, daring me to go on to 30 wings and so on, and questioning how fit I will be to do the podcast the next week, not being able to sit and all. Hey, folks, I'm going to go for 20, all right? It's not my goal to be the fastest. It's not my goal to eat the most. It's my goal to eat 20 and raise money for Normal Show Live. Now, if I eat more than 20 and you want to pay more, that's great. But 20 is all I'm going to hold anyone to, if I can make it that far. We'll see. Herb tells me there are some pretty hot wings. And speaking of Normal Show Live, we are getting rolling on putting this thing together to debut Labor Day weekend. We'll have all the details as soon as we've got everything finalized about where you can hear it and how you can call in. Now, of course, it's time for some shout-outs. Are you
good? It's a Normal shout-out.
Had an activist in Wichita, Kansas call me today, probably from hearing the podcast yesterday, saying he's ready to get involved with ending adult marijuana prohibition. We got to talking for a while, and it was quite interesting. Kansas is surrounded by states that have the initiative system: Oklahoma, Missouri, Nebraska, what's the other one there? Colorado. But unfortunately, Kansas itself does not have citizen initiatives. So if they're going to do anything with decriminalization or with medical marijuana, it's going to have to go through the legislature. So we'll help you as much as we can with that. Just send us an email at stash@normal.org, because the first step is getting organized and forming a chapter so you can plan from there. Also, want to give a shout out to Vermont. I had an email from a Vermonter who is also an original Idahoan like myself. And this Vermonter says they want to get involved with marijuana law reform. So any people in the state of Vermont interested, send me an email at stash@normal.org. And speaking of Idaho, we're still on for my trip next weekend, August 8th, to Boise, Idaho, going back home to visit the folks and going to spend some time at the Flying Pie Pizza on Fairview Avenue from 4 to 6 on Saturday, August 8th, looking to get people together who want to organize and form Boise Normal. Now, coming up on today's Daily Audio Stash, we start with your hemp headlines, including reporting from Chris Goldstein in New Jersey about a multiple sclerosis patient who is facing 20 years in prison for growing 17 plants. I take a look at Time Magazine's story today on the dreaded super pot being grown in Florida. Funny thing is, Time has written a few super pot articles in the past. I'll take you through them. A new review of scientific studies in the United Kingdom shows that long-term, even heavy cannabis use has at most a minimal impact on the brain and cognition. And in our stupid stoner stories, another bad place to stash your weed. Today is Thursday, so we go to Southern California and visit with our friend Terry Joyce, who brings with her guest Johnny Dam from LA Talk Radio. In our Daily Toker Tunes brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, we've got a tune for Rockin' Thursday. And in our Cannabis Conversations, we speak with Kevin Oliver in Spokane, Washington, with Inland Northwest Normal. He tells us about his experience at the Gorge and the Slightly Stupid concert, where Normal chapters have been tabling this summer, as well as a look at Spokane's 5 medical marijuana dispensaries. You may not have known it, but apparently there are dispensaries in eastern Washington state as well. All that and more are coming up on your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. New Jersey MS patient faces 20 years for 17 plants. From the New Jersey Star-Ledger. New Jersey multiple sclerosis, or MS, patient John Ray Wilson, age 36, was told by Superior Court Judge Robert Reed during a pretrial hearing in Somerville, New Jersey, that he may not let the jury know that he has MS or that his use of marijuana was an attempt to treat his disease. Wilson faces 20 years in prison for growing a few marijuana plants that he used to treat his MS. Wilson was arrested on August 18, 2008, after the New Jersey State Police Marijuana Eradication Squad found his garden. Wilson was charged with manufacturing marijuana despite his diagnosis of MS, despite a statement in support of medical marijuana by the National MS Society, and despite pending legislation that would protect MS patients who use medical marijuana in New Jersey. MS expert Dr. Dennis Petros submitted testimony on Wilson's behalf, but the judge refused to admit that testimony into trial. The prosecuting attorney asked, quote, "If you robbed a bank and had MS, would you expect special treatment for that?" end quote. Wilson plans to appeal the judge's decision. The National MS Society recently confirmed in an expert opinion paper that standard therapies often provide inadequate relief for the symptoms of MS, and that marijuana helps with MS symptoms such as pain and spasticity and could limit disease progression. Ken Wolski, registered nurse, executive director of the Coalition for Medical Marijuana New Jersey, or CMMNJ, said, quote, "To know that an inexpensive herb like marijuana is able not only to relieve the immediate suffering of MS, the pain and spasticity, but also to actually arrest the progression of this incurable disease is a compelling reason to use it therapeutically. It is an outrage that Wilson faces many years of prison for this, and that he cannot even explain this to the jury why he was using marijuana," end quote. An estimated 15% of people with the disease use marijuana for symptom relief, according to the MS Society. The New Jersey Compassionate Use Medical Marijuana Act, which was approved by the New Jersey Senate, awaits a vote in the Assembly. This bill would allow patients to use a small amount of marijuana when a licensed physician recommends it for the symptoms of a number of medical conditions, including multiple sclerosis. Governor John Corzine has said that he would sign the bill into law when it gets to his desk. CMMNJ, a 501c3 public charity, is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to educate the public about the benefits of safe, legal access to medical marijuana. For more info, contact the Coalition for Medical Marijuana New Jersey Incorporated, www.cmmnj.org, or phone 609-394-2137. Time magazine looks at Florida marijuana grow industry. California may be the center of the marijuana trade and the controversies over its legalization, but Florida has surpassed it in one important category. The Sunshine State is now the country's leader in indoor marijuana cultivation. It is a potent distinction because most of the marijuana grown this way is cultured hydroponically, that is, mostly without soil and with a carefully calibrated cocktail of chemicals and lighting, to create some of the highest level of highs on the market. In 2006, Florida law enforcement here discovered 480 homes growing marijuana indoors. Last year, 1,022 grow houses were busted. Quote, "This isn't your grandma's marijuana," end quote, quipped a Miami-Dade narcotics officer at one bust as he tossed garbage bags stuffed with confiscated marijuana into an unmarked police truck. Levels of THC, the agent in marijuana that produces feelings of euphoria and in some users mild hallucinations and paranoia, have risen dramatically because of indoor techniques. 30 years ago, most marijuana contained about 7% THC. Today, indoor growers boast THC levels of 25% or higher, thanks to the additional care that indoor plants receive. Ah, yes. Pot 2.0, not your father's Woodstock weed, raises its ugly head. Except the weed from 30 years ago was supposed to be only 2% THC, at least according to the Time magazine story in 2004 about the previous super pot hotspot, Vancouver, British Columbia. Time magazine, 2004. Although the actual potency of BC bud varies from batch to batch, depending on how it's grown, the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration says that as much as 25% of BC bud is made of the psychoactive drug tetrahydrocannabinol, or THC. In contrast, the pot that the hippie generation smoked in the 1970s had only 2% THC content, and most pot consumed in the U.S. today averages about 7% THC. So, 5 years ago, Time warned the smokers of 7% weed about the 25% BC bud that wasn't like the 2% weed of the 70s, and today, Time warns the smokers about Florida's 25% hydro bud that's not like the 7% weed of the 70s that we were apparently smoking all the way up to 2004. Okay, let's look back farther to a 2000 Time story on Mark Emery. Time magazine, 2000. Known as BC Bud, this pot is finding a lucrative market among U.S. users of recreational drugs. A pound of dried BC Bud, whose active ingredient, tetrahydrocannabinol, or THC, accounts for up to 30% of its weight, sells for about $8,000 in New York City. The more common marijuana from Mexico, with a THC content of about 5%, sells for as little as $300 a pound. Ah, so 9 years ago, the BC Bud was 30% THC, and most folks were smoking the regular 5% THC Mexican varieties. So then, did the 7% weed of the 70s drop 2 points, or did the 2% weed of the 70s raise 3 points? I'm confused, and I'm not even high. Let's look back to the actual time period in question, the 1970s. Time magazine, 1978. Equally adept at agronomy and foiling the police, Oregon's pot farmers turned homegrown weed into a profitable racket by developing their unique Sensimilia hybrid. The robust, waste-free strain attracts buyers willing to pay $1,600 a pound, the yield from just one well-cultivated plant. Studies show that Sensimilia's weed contains 5 times more tetrahydrocannabinol, pot's narcotic ingredient, than the common Mexican variety. Even federal drug experts are impressed. Quote, "A good deal of expertise goes into producing that kind of plant," end quote, notes Dr. Carlton Turner, director of marijuana research for the National Institute of Drug Abuse at the University of Mississippi. So, if 1978 Sensimilia was 5 times more potent than the average weed in 1978, and that was supposed to be 2% if we listened to Time in 2004, or 5%, Time in 2000, or 7% Time in 2009, That means that fine Oregon bud was already at somewhere between 10 to 35% 31 years ago. Except back then, the pound of super pot went for $1,600, and today it fetches $8,000. The 2009 Time article goes on to scare us about the hydroponic growers illegally tapping into the electrical grid, maintaining high-voltage lighting systems and chemical irrigation systems, sometimes protecting themselves with weapons, and sometimes living in the homes with children. It highlights how the rest of the Florida economy is suffering so much, the housing market is full of foreclosures, which the sellers of $8,000 a pound super pot are buying up left and right. So be afraid, be very afraid, of the new Florida super pot. It's just as strong as the 2004 BC Bud and the 1978 Oregon Sensimilla. For the record, marijuana potency, on average, has increased over the past 40 years from about 4% to about 8% on average. High-potency strains have always been available. The government approves Marinol, a 100% potent THC pill, as a Schedule 3 medicine. Increased potency is a direct result of prohibition, as buyers paying cognac prices for plant matter tend to want the most bang for their $300 to $420 per ounce. Smugglers and sellers of marijuana in a black market are under pressure to maintain secrecy, so they'd rather use their valuable storage and smuggling space for the best-earning product, just as bootleggers during Prohibition favored smaller crates of whiskey bottles over larger barrels of beer and wine. In surveys of cannabis users in pseudo-legal Amsterdam, they prefer the milder varieties of pot, just as alcohol drinkers after Prohibition preferred beer and wine to hard liquor. And finally, THC is non-toxic, so potency does not matter. People using marijuana use enough to get high. If it's Mexican schwag, they smoke a joint and get high. If it's Florida, BC, Oregon bud, they smoke a puff and get high. It's not like if you smoke a 7% joint, you get high, but if you smoke a 25% joint, you murder your sister with an axe. Now, as for the grow houses, the illegal electricity taps, the armed grow house owners, the housing market manipulation, the chemically fertilized high voltage light hydroponic operations, and so forth, I'd ask just one question. How many Florida homes have been converted to clandestine indoor tobacco farms or large-scale home breweries lately? Long-term heavy marijuana use has only minimal impact on brain and cognition. London, United Kingdom. The consumption of cannabis, even long-term, has a, quote, minimal impact on brain function, according to a systematic literature review published online this week by the journal Psychological Medicine. An international team of investigators from the United Kingdom, Spain, Brazil, Australia, and Switzerland conducted a systematic review of the effects of cannabis on brain structure and function. Authors wrote, quote, "We reviewed literature reporting neuroimaging studies of chronic or acute cannabis use published up until January 2009. 66 studies were identified, of which 41 met the inclusion criteria. 33 were functional and 8 structural imaging studies. Only 3 of the structural imaging studies found differences between users and controls," end quote. Investigators concluded, quote, "minimal evidence of major effects of cannabis on brain structure have been reported," end quote, noting that cannabis users and controls perform similarly on cognitive tasks. According to a 2001 study published in the journal Archives of General Psychiatry, long-term cannabis smokers who abstained from pot for 1 week, quote, "showed virtually no significant differences from control subjects, those who had smoked marijuana less than 50 times in their lives, on a battery of 10 neuropsychological tests," end quote. Investigators added, quote, "former heavy users who had consumed little or no cannabis in the 3 months before testing also showed no significant differences from control subjects on any of these tests on any of the testing days," end quote. While this is great news, what if the tests had shown chronic marijuana use does cause severe brain damage to long-term users? Do we determine whether adults should be locked up for what they ingest based on the harms of long-term heavy use? If so, why are alcohol and tobacco allowed? We know they cause severe damage to lungs, heart, kidneys, liver, skin, and brain. I'm all for the religious use of ganja, the medical use of cannabis, and the fact that the social use of marijuana is safer than alcohol, whatever reason, is fine by me, because I believe from the borders of my skin inward, that territory is mine, and only I can make laws to govern it. If I want to put drain opener in my body, that is my right. Well, not for long, as I would die. If I want to slam my head against a brick wall, that is my right. If I wish to inhale the smoke of a smoldering flower, that is my right. If I am allowed to hurl my body out of an airplane while wearing a parachute, or jump off a tall bridge with a rubber band around my feet, or walk across fiery hot coals barefoot to get my kicks, why can I not smoke marijuana in the privacy of my home?
Stupid Stoner Stories.
As a public service, Normal reminds you that smoking marijuana will not make one stupid. However, some stupid people do smoke marijuana. Don't be one of those stoners that make the rest of us look bad. Learn your lesson from today's
Stupid Stoner Story.
Bad places to stash weed file. Under the cop car that's busting you. From the blog at TwinCities.com, we find a police report from Minneapolis.
St. Paul, Minnesota. A Minnesota man is in jail on charges of possession with intent to deliver marijuana following an arrest in St. Paul. According to the police report, Abiyemi Kibaso Jr. was approached by Officer John Sherwood, who was investigating a burglary report in which a handgun was taken. As Sherwood began questioning, Kibaso ignored lawful orders and began walking away. Kibaso then took a baggie of marijuana in his possession and threw it under the squad car to try and hide it. Sherwood took Kibaso into custody and discovered many more baggies and cash on Kibaso.
Minnesota is a decrim state. Possession of less than 42.5 grams, or a little less than an ounce and a half, is only a misdemeanor offense with a $200 fine. But any amount in two or more baggies is going to get you an intent to deliver or sell charge, which then starts putting you on the Minnesota felony charts for 5 years and a $10,000 fine. Your underwear is always a better place to hide weed than underneath the cop car. With weed in your crotch, police need a pretty specific reason to search you. They're allowed to pat you down for weapons, but not your crotch. You can and should refuse all searches, which means not responding or acting when they say, "Take everything out of your pockets," or, "What do you have there stashed in your crotch?" And you just repeat, "I don't consent to any searches, and I'd like to speak with an attorney before answering questions. Am I free to go, officer?" Now, that doesn't mean they won't find or manufacture a pretext to take you in, search you, and find your crotch weed. But it will mean your lawyer has more ammunition to work with to suppress the evidence of your search and get you out of court with no criminal record. However, if you do give the cop your weed, you know, because he's such a nice guy and wants to help you out, and it'll all go easier on you if you do, you will be arrested, guaranteed, and your lawyer will have no recourse because you willingly surrendered your rights and your weed.
If you want to win people over, you can't just drone on like Ben Stein. You've got to have a little more showmanship. Here, watch.
NormalCon 2009. Yes, We Cannabis. September 24th through 26th, 2009, in San Francisco, California.
The war on drugs has been an utter failure, and I think that we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
President Obama was right in 2004, and 5 years later, the American people agree.
I think it's time for debate, and I think that we ought to study very carefully on what other countries are doing that have legalized marijuana.
At our 38th annual conference, you'll learn all the facts you need in the debate to legalize marijuana.
As regards to legalization, it's not in the president's vocabulary and it's not in mine.
We're working hard to make sure legalization is in the drug czar's vocabulary.
Whether legalizing marijuana would improve the economy, the answer is no. I don't think that is a good strategy.
There's nothing funny about legalization, Mr. President, or waiting until the last minute to book your trip to NormalCon 2009.
Early bird registration rates apply until August. Registration, sponsorships, and vending information is available at norml.org or by calling 888-67-NORMAL. Weed.
That's Hoobie Valley, Hoobie Ha.
Weed.
Where any office boy or young mechanic.
Now it's time for a report from the epicenter of American cannabis culture with our Southern California correspondent. You know her from ComedyNation.com and her appearance as a finalist on season one of NBC's Last Comic Standing. It's our friend, cannabis comedian and marijuana activist, the lovely and talented Terry Joyce. Back down to beautiful, sunny Southern California and our good friend Terry Joyce. How you doing, Terry?
I'm doing great.
You know, this is kind of a strange and weird and bizarre universe we live in because I'm going to be hitting my fourth day straight of triple digit temperatures in Portland, Oregon. I think we're hotter than you guys are right now.
Well, we're pretty hot out here too. You know, of course, there's some areas that were triple digit. West Hollywood, you know, this is where I live at. So it is a little bit cooler on this side.
Oh, good.
I have to say, once you start to go over the hill to Studio City or to the Valley or anything like that, it's pretty miserable.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been doing a lot of stories lately on California, and of course, Oakland passed their medical marijuana tax, and L.A. City Council, or was it county, had a bunch of meetings for hardship exemptions and so on. And it seems like this medical marijuana dispensary movement, especially in Southern California, has really taken off. And a lot of the governments are trying to restrict it or trying to find ways to deal with it or regulate it. And you were telling me earlier about some stuff in West Hollywood that maybe we ought to tell people about.
Yes, there is something. And it's been really, really positive in West Hollywood. You know, I am a... you know, I go to the pharmacy and, I went in to, you know, buy my medicine and, Bill, the owner, got down on his knees and I was like, whoa, what's going on here? And he said, would you come and speak to the, you know, at the city council meeting, that they were, going up for, in front of the mayor and the city council because, there are, see, there's four dispensaries that are actually only allowed in West Hollywood. You really can't have any more than that. And there's certain state law requirements. For instance, it's only that you can be like 500 feet away from a school. You know, a dispensary can't be within 1,000 feet of one another. And there was only one dispensary that actually, you know, passed the guidelines. The other three failed at some point. And the pharmacy was right next to, it's near a school, and so they were wanting to, you know, they were asking people from the community to speak on their behalf. And I don't know, it was the first time I've ever been to a city council meeting, and I gotta say, when I spoke, I was a little bit nervous, you know, because it's not the same as being a stand-up.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you can't go, hey, how's everybody doing tonight? Whoa! You know, give a shout-out for the judge, you know, I mean, that's just not gonna work.
That's not gonna happen.
I spoke, you know, my piece, and there was an overwhelming response from the medical marijuana issues that were presented that night. One thing that was on the agenda was they were talking about going from a CUP license to a business license, and also the, you know, grandfathering the four existing dispensaries in the community despite whatever the state guidelines might be. And it was really interesting. I felt that everybody from the marijuana community spoke really intelligently about, and very heartfelt. They dropped the criminal background check because many dispensary owners have had to go do jail time or have had, you know, big court cases and ankle bracelets and all that kind of stuff because of the fact that they've been persecuted unfairly for the federal government.
Right, right.
So they dropped that. They said that wouldn't be fair because, you know, this whole situation basically isn't fair. The one thing that they did drop was they said we're not going to have any growers, you know, a place just for growing because, you know, we're not an agricultural area.
Right.
And they felt that it was, you know, it wasn't energy effective.
There we go.
Because it would take a lot of energy, and it would have to be done not in a natural way that would actually perhaps cost more money for for the area. But it was really interesting, and the mayor and all and, like, the council members. I mean, it is definitely a progressive medical marijuana community. And it was really refreshing to see and be a part of.
Well,
if anybody ever has a chance to, you know, whatever issue it is, whether it be about medical marijuana or something that they care about, to go and actually participate like that is empowering. You really do feel like you do have a voice in your community, and we really do.
Yeah, being a part of your government, and when you're acting there at the local level, you have so much more of a say because there's fewer people to have to talk with or against. So, yeah, it's a great idea. Get involved with your government. Check out what your city council's up to and make some positive changes. Now, I want to give you also a chance. You always bring us the most fascinating guests from the Southern California area, and I'm really excited to talk to the next gentleman. So go ahead and tell us who we're speaking with, Terry.
My guest is Johnny Dam. And he's a very funny comedian. He has a political radio talk show. He hosts The Damage Report, which is now an award-winning show online, and he is a huge medical marijuana supporter, and he's my guest.
All right. Johnny Dam, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. It's actually, I've heard a lot about this show, and it's actually a pleasure to finally be on it.
Well, thanks so much. And everybody, you can check out The Damage Report. It's on latalkradio.com, so check that out. And your show, just give our listeners a little flavor of, you know, what they're going to get if they check it out.
Basically, it's social, political commentary and satire. I take three other comics or activists or actors, you know, people in the industry. I bring them into the station every day, Monday through Friday, 2 to 4 p.m., and we talk about five of that day's top news headlines. It's a chance for these people to drop their acts and actually give their views, but a lot of funny comes out of it as well.
Yeah, I'm sure. And
more importantly, there's a lot of relevance.
And being based in...
It's a lot of fun. It's educational. And, well, it's just an all-around swell time. That's what it is.
Well,
it's a blast. It's something I've wanted to do for a very long time, and turns out I was supposed to be doing it.
I know that feeling, believe me. Now, you're based, of course, in L.A., so I imagine when you do those top five headlines, sometimes those headlines have to do with marijuana. What's the discussion been like on that subject for your show?
Well, let me just go. I guess I could start by giving my stance on medical marijuana.
Sure, absolutely.
This is the analogy I use all the time. Let's take a guy who's had a rough day at work. Maybe he didn't get to eat lunch. He stops off, has a couple shots of JD on the way home. He gets home, dinner's not ready because, hey, wife had one of her episodes. The kids are making a lot of noise. He goes ape shit on the kids and starts pounding on them. Take that same guy on the way home, smokes a couple hits of weed, medicine, gets home, takes everybody out for pizza. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Family time's a little interesting.
I know a lot of doctors that have prescribed medical marijuana. I don't know a single one that's ever prescribed Jack Daniels for cancer.
That's a very good point, too. Now, of course, the big talk in California is about not just the medical marijuana, but the legalization for everyone with Tom Amiano's AB 390. What do you think about the prospects of that, of legal weed for everyone in the state of California?
I think that it will help with the budget deficit that we have here in the state. It will generate revenue. Everybody that owns a dispensary right now is raising their hand saying, please tax me. When was the last time you heard any business doing that? I can't recall a one that said, please tax me.
Yeah, that tax in,
they're all saying, tax me. Make it, because once you start taxing them, you have created by de facto a legal industry.
Right. And
there was one thing that I noticed, at the council meeting in regards to dispensaries and marijuana. They were kind of concerned about the fact that it's becoming more about cash and wanted to keep implementing the fact that there needs to be compassionate use or programs for people who are indigent or unable to afford their medicine. And so that was something that I thought was interesting. The only thing I'm scared of is that, you know, we'll forget it'll become just, you know, really all about money in some ways. And other people were concerned about that too.
Mm. Now, I hear where you're coming from, but the end result is still making it legal.
Sure.
So sometimes there's a means to an end at that point, and it's not, we don't always like the, you know, to justify the path we took, but it got us to the same result. And maybe that might be the little piece of pie we have to eat You know, because it will become about cash. I mean, look around us. We're living in a world of greed at this point. I wish there were a 12-step program for greed. Unfortunately, the pharmaceutical companies would invent a $2 pill for them to take for it.
I really think the
focus should always be on medicinal right now, because there's a friend, a joint friend that you and I both have, has this publication coming out. I'm not going to name names, but
okay,
I've read the publication, and this publication actually concerns me, because I think it sets the movement back 25 years.
Yeah, yeah.
When I read, and I'm going to go ahead just read the first sentence from this publication. And like I said, you know, this bless his heart, his heart's in the right place, but not completely. It's an amazing time to be alive, especially if you're a stoner living in Los Angeles. That is not helping the cause at all. Mm. That's like saying it's a great time to be an alcoholic.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, I've had that discussion before with, you know, people on our in our community here about the use of epithets like stoner or pothead or doper, and a lot of what I get from feedback from people is like, you know, that's our word. We use it in our own private time, maybe amongst each other, but to come out publicly like that does not do us any favors.
No, it doesn't. And so I think that's more dangerous than your worry about the money, because the money will actually help in some way, hopefully. And I'm using air quotes here. But that, there's no way that can help the cause. There's no way that can help the cause at all. That can actually be brought up and used against you in every town council meeting you ever attend.
Yeah.
I hope it does better than the California lottery did. I mean, the whole thing about the California lottery. Oh, and your schools win too. Yeah, really?
Yeah, I understand that they're slashing math from the curriculum next year.
I've always said that the lottery is a tax on people who are bad at math in the first place, so.
Oh boy.
Exactly.
So the Southern California scene right now, as far as, you know, like we've reported on many times, there's a lot of dispensaries going on down there. And to some people, it feels like, I mean, to them, it feels like, well, it's legal already. You know, I got my card. I can go into the store. I can buy, you know, a guaranteed product. We can good supply, good selection. So how do we talk to the people in Southern California that now aren't as concerned about it? They're like, well, I got mine. It's no big deal. How do we convince them it really needs to be legalized on a grander level?
To be honest, can I answer this, Terry?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay, well, cause I felt you wanted to say something, and I didn't want to jump on top of you without at least asking first.
You know, yeah.
I think first and foremost, they need to tighten it back down to getting the referral to begin with, because now you can walk into a referral clinic, and they say, what's wrong with you? And they'll coach you through the answers to get you your card. And when I do think, considering it's medicinal, if you want to help your cause, you should stay medicinal until it becomes legalized. Maybe I'm being a bit of a prude here, but when you can walk in and say, well, my problem is I have an extra $150 in my bank account. Can you help me with that? And you walk out with your card. Once again, you're not helping the cause at that point. Now you're telling all your friends that you're a legal stoner now.
Yeah.
So I think that they have to get back to, you know, you've got to have a reason for getting the medicinal marijuana, as long as it's still classified as medicinal marijuana. Once it becomes legal like alcohol, then it doesn't really matter at that point. Then it's a whole different set of restrictions, 18 or over, 21 or over, whatever they say.
Yeah.
I just think that a lot of people are taking advantage of that. Dispensaries are popping up all over the place. It used to be that an empty building sat empty long enough until it became a karate studio. Now they become dispensaries.
You know, I look forward to a time when, you know, when we do eventually get marijuana re-legalized, where there will still be a distinction between medicinal and what they call recreational use, but the distinction would be whether or not you have to pay the tax. Now, if you're a medical user, you're not having to pay the tax. You get to pay a pretty low price for the marijuana. But if you're just a, you know, a guy like me who likes to smoke some weed, well, then you got to pay that tax. What vision do you see for the future of legalization?
Well, I do see it becoming legal, and I think we're going to see it within the next 2 years.
Wow.
I do see it being taxed. There was a bill proposing a $50 tax per ounce just recently, which got wiped off the board.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just getting plain old greedy at that point, because then you'll still have black market weed.
Right.
And the only way you'll get arrested is if you're actually caught buying or selling it, because once you have it, there's no proof of purchase.
Right.
So black market weed will still be prevalent because people aren't going to want to pay when you have a $2 an ounce and they say it's a $50 tax on top of it. You know, that's a 25% tax. no one's going to fall for that. It's just not going to happen. So they have to be reasonable about it. They have to tell us, because every tax creates a revenue stream. That's why cigarettes will never go away, because every tax on a pack of cigarettes is a revenue stream for another project somewhere down the line. So they're going to have to delineate where that money's going to, and then it's up to us to actually follow up on it, which unfortunately most people are more interested in American Idol and celebutard rehab than actually following up on where their tax money goes.
Yeah, that's unfortunately true too often in this society these days. I do have to wrap things up here with Johnny Dam from LA Talk Radio and the Damage Report at latalkradio.com. Before I let you go, anything else you want to tell our listeners or give them some plugs for some of your events?
Well, be sure to tune in to the Damage Report Monday through Friday, 2 to 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on latalkradio.com. We are live. We do take calls. And just keep your head up and inform people that say, well, because the dumbest answer is it shouldn't be legal because it's illegal. And that's not an answer. That's just a fact. And it's time to educate people. And like I said, the people that go around saying, well, it's a great time to be a stoner, educate them. Tell them they're not helping, really.
Terry?
Actually, I'm going to be on Johnny Dam's talk radio show Wednesday. So anybody who's listening that wants to chime in on any of the topics, please come be a part of the show and listen, because it's a wonderful show, too.
And Johnny, we'll work something out that we can get. I'll call into your show as well. I think I'd really enjoy getting a chance to talk some more and get some of my opinions out there, too. So we'll work something out for that, okay?
You got it.
All right. Thanks a lot for joining us here on The Stash, you guys. Hey, Tokers. This is Radical Russ. There's only one thing I love as much as fine Oregon bud, and that's spicy food so hot it'll peel paint. Thanks to the generous sponsorship of HerbAgeDesigns.com, I'm putting both my true loves to the test to support the launch of Normal Show Live. It's the El Jefe Chicken Hot Wings Eating Contest, Friday, August 28th, here in Portland, and the contest benefits the American Red Cross, another favorite charity of mine. You can help. We're signing up pledges for the contest starting as low as 25 cents per wing, up to the 20 wings I'm pledging to eat. You can win, too. The top money entry and a randomly selected entry win HerbAge prizes and one of my Starfish Designs Gandalf-style pieces of glass art. Send in your entry to stash@normal.org with the subject Hot Wings Contest and tell me how much you'll pledge per wing, up to 20 wings. Also include your real name, age, and shipping address should you win the prize. Only entries from adults 18 and older will be accepted. Starfish Designs prizes will not be shipped to Idaho, Pennsylvania, or Indiana.
The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our daily Toker tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling and refresh all you stashers for another day on the front lines of the drug war. Enjoy this cut from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com and visit our blog at stash.normal.org to learn how you can vote for your favorites and enter your Toker tunes in the 2009 Marijuana Music Awards. It's Rockin' Thursday, and as requested, we're listening to metal with the song Marijuana by Lunatics on Parole. Described as the next evolution of metal, Lunatics on Parole sing political music. The band was formed in 1997 by Kenny the Gardener as a voice that railed against the political and corporate conglomerates running America and the world. The band have performed many live shows and released three critically acclaimed CDs. Lunatics on Parole's latest album, Rise, is a war cry, giving the message, "Don't be another sheep, rise up to stand up for yourself and your rights."
Although blunt and to the point, the band's songs are injected with humor and range from political commentary to party music. For the latest about this popular metal band, check out myspace.com/lunaticsonparole and enjoy this Toker tune, Marijuana.
Here's a kite, everybody!
This drug in front of me is what they call marijuana. A green leafy substance which I am going to light.
Roll a big fatty. Kick back with your friends. Whatever you do, the fun never ends. Marijuana, one little aroma. Marijuana, I'm in a coma. Marijuana, that's how it tasted. Marijuana, man, I'm a waster. Marijuana, I'm out of control. Marijuana, back another bowl. Marijuana, I'll say bye-bye. Marijuana, I'm not so fucking high.
That's right. Yes, reefer.
Grab your bag and bowl. Jump into your car. You just drive all day.
You that in America, right now, over 1 million children sell marijuana, what would you think? Would you think that any public policy that creates over 1 million teenage marijuana dealers needs to be re-examined and possibly amended? You would not be alone. The members of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, aka NORML, have been working since 1970 to reform marijuana laws such that responsible adults, not children, sell and use marijuana. Isn't it high time to reform America's misguided marijuana laws? This is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of NORML in Washington, D.C. Only concerned citizens can effectively end the federal government's nearly 70-year-old prohibition on responsible adult marijuana sales and use. Want to know more about how you can help? Contact us at Normal, toll-free, 888-67-NORMAL, or by visiting the organization's popular and informative webpage at normal, N-O-R-M-L.org.
Legalization, decriminalization, lowest law enforcement priority, medical marijuana, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis, industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that intersect nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare, the economy, global climate change, law enforcement and prisons, immigration, religion, free speech, energy policy, and war. Now we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our Normal daily audio stash, Cannabis Conversations.
We're going to head to the east side of Washington State right now and speak with the executive director of Inland Northwest Normal, which you can reach at innormal.org, Kevin Oliver from Spokane. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Russ.
Before we get to the discussion I wanted to talk about, I did want to cover that you guys were part of those that group of chapters that I got involved with, the Slightly Stupid Blazed and Confused Tour. Your guys' concert was at the Gorge in George, Washington. For people that have never been to George or seen this amphitheater, give them an idea of what this concert venue's like and what sort of event did you have there with your tabling for the Blazed and Confused Tour?
Well, I would say Google it, Bing it, Yahoo it, get a picture of it. It's basically a 100-mile view, expansive view of a million years of history. It's the Columbia River Gorge, and while it's not as deep as the Grand Canyon, it's every bit as grand, and it gets comments from all artists who play out there. It seats about 20,000 people, and it wasn't sold out, but there was probably half that amount there. And the Blazed and Confused crowd was totally receptive to our tent there. And a lot of them came right up to the tent, you know, blazing. and so we got a little confused, too.
so
not slightly stupid.
There we go.
Which is actually, I guess, who contacted who was the contact for our chapter to get into the venue.
Yeah.
And about 12 hours before the concert started, because I guess the tour's still going on and the potential still exists for other chapters to get in, they don't really talk to the venue until they're coming up on the venue. So while I was in correspondence with them 2 or 3 days out, they're still, yeah, we haven't even talked to the venue yet. We don't know how you're going to be tabling or if they're going to provide the tables and booths. Well, we are totally self-sufficient, and it was pretty much outdoors. So we were the only vending booth there besides their T-shirts and the captive food consortium that they've got out there. Hmm. So it was, one, kind of an exclusive environment, and two, a very receptive environment. And we sold a lot of merchandise in a couple hours, man. It was like, when I say sold merchandise, let me take that back. We have a jar, like a quart glass jar, and a Kerr jar with a hole on top for donations and a Normal sticker on it. It's pretty nondescript. And the rest of the booth is all Normal branded, you know, nice banners. We try to get official stuff. And had a local graffiti artist do It's Normal to Smoke Pot type of logo.
Nice.
Which I'll go ahead and submit to the site. And we got a lot of donations for those T-shirts and about 3 or 4 pages of email list memberships.
Yeah, it really works to reach out to these people. I'm really glad the Blazed and Confused folks got in touch with us. And we hope to have more concert tours like that coming through with Normal chapters partnering up and tabling and getting this information out to the people that really need it. So thank you.
It works well. I mean, I contacted the Cheech and Chong people when they rolled through town, and it was the same way. They got a hold of the local promoter and said, look, we want these guys in, because, you know, Thomas Chong is part of the board, and I just approached them as a local chapter. I don't know if anyone else did, but they were very receptive to it. I would think that we could do this with a lot of different touring groups, whether it's, you know, like comedy like that or a concert tour. The week, and I was heading out to the Gorge, so that was about 2 weeks ago, I was invited to a 100 Years of Motorcycle tour, which is about a 3-city tour here in the Northwest, 2 or 3 city. I think they're going to be in Portland this weekend,
mm-hmm.
the 100 Years of Motorcycle. And it's a pretty big rally with chopper builders from all over the country. So, well, I mean, I'm not hip-hop and I'm not the biker, here comes the normal booth, invited to both of these venues with no tabling fee charge whatsoever, just because they want us there in vending spots that people are paying a lot of money, if they could even pay, like at the Gorge, to get into, which they can't. So it's kind of an exclusive feeling, and we really just empower people to talk about marijuana,
yeah,
or law reform, or whatever they feel they need to talk about, and it feels good for them to give us a little tithe, as it were, in exchange for a symbol of the marijuana movement, whether it's a sticker or a shirt or whatever. So it's been very cool to go from one demographic to another and have everything else be the same. I love you, man. We're glad you're here. All that.
Yeah, it's amazing. From reggae concerts to bluegrass to rock and roll, hip hop, comedy, even country music. There's people that want to hear our message and they're willing to have us out there. So again, I thank you guys for doing that, especially on the short notice we gave you. But
thank you for the lead, man.
Yeah.
Short notice, but we got her together.
That's right. Great. Now, the topic I did want to discuss with you, you'd brought this up to my attention through email, but we've been talking a lot on the Stash about the California dispensaries, and recently there's been news in Colorado regarding dispensaries. Now they've got over 70 of them, but you're telling me you've got some dispensaries open and operating in Spokane, Washington, and that's the first I'd heard of it. So tell our listeners a little bit about what's happening.
Well, Washington State RCWs were allowed for the medical use of marijuana under an initiative that was passed a couple years ago. And last year, it was further defined to actually give the definitions of, or further the definitions for caregiver and or patient provider, which would then quantify the number of plants they could have, the quantity they could have, et cetera. So that was great to cover some of the gray area. Well, technically, the law states, and I'm just paraphrasing now, the RCW, you can have one patient per caregiver. Well, there is a group that has opened a public, very public dispensary. It was on the front. It was on the front page of the paper, and it's right on like a main commerce corner, which is anchored by two major grocery stores and some smaller business plazas. It's right there, and it's called the Change Clinic. It offers, according to the, you know, what I've seen from the news articles and talking to people, the same quantity, if not, same kind of qualities, if not quantities of medicine, you know, packaged marijuana for sale. And they are using the patient-provider clause, from what I understand, to say, okay, look, you're in here behind closed doors with me right now. Sign here. I'm your provider. Bing, here's your medicine. Next. Then they're filing individual contracts for each individual patient. And that hasn't been tested. And it's really progressive as this is the first public dispensary in the state. Now, I'm not saying there haven't been homegrown, cottage industries around this for years, if not centuries,
yeah.
You know, but, or through other medical organizations or co-ops or clinics. But this is a very public dispensary. Bring in any kind of documentation and sign here that says it's valid. And, you know, it's very convenient for patients or people with the doctor's recommendation, which I'm not sure if California is a full-on prescription.
No, it's recommendation, just like the rest.
Is it a defensible, or is it on the offense?
It's a defensible recommendation. I believe once they have the recommendation, they are protected in court, and their registration card is like an optional thing that they have to do, or they can do.
Protected in court, meaning tell it to the judge and let the judge decide.
I believe that's the situation, but again, I'm not a California lawyer, so I can't say for sure.
Yeah, and I'm not a lawyer, but I know that's pretty much how the Washington state law is. So they, law enforcement is feeling the will of the people, it seems. And I know that at the national level, they're still going out after major, you know, large or, but hopefully, at least like in Washington State, and like here in Spokane, they'll at least look the other way. I mean, the city has now granted business licenses to four other dispensaries. It's like, what is going on here? I don't know if there's a bunch of people giving advice to open dispensaries in Spokane and people are flocking here. I don't know if they're, for some reason, this is becoming a hotbed for dispensaries, and it's very interesting to be a normal chapter and be fielded a lot of questions, you know, how do I open a dispensary, blah, blah, blah. And all I can say is, you know, apply to the city for a business permit. Good luck.
Yeah, and so
here's an attorney's, normal attorney's name here locally, you know, thank you for your interest.
Yeah.
It's interesting. What I'm trying to do is form a network of all active citizens, whether they're patients or actively involved in promoting a dispensary or a clinic, where they bring in doctors to review patients, or just an educated senior citizen who's retired who wants the option to have medical marijuana if they're ever stricken with cancer, and who's never used it but doesn't see the big crime. I want all people who are active to sign up. We're putting out newsletter on a sign-up sheet in all of interested areas or places that will have it, whether it's a compassionate or sympathetic retailer or a place like a clinic or a dispensary, so that all interested individuals can be part of a local action network similar to what the ASA has, where they will email out a blast, hey, you know, court hearing in 2 weeks on this issue, let's all show up at the courthouse, or this veteran is trying to be excommunicated from this home for using medical marijuana, let's all show up and rally and things like that. Or let's have a party in the park at 4:20 on Saturday. Everybody show up.
Well, it sounds like a good network to put together there. And it sounds as if, you know, if the city of Spokane is issuing these business licenses, they must be reaping some sort of tax benefits from them, aren't they?
Well, they're definitely reaping tax benefits. And it's kind of hopefully the city isn't acting as too much of a double agent. But in addition to reaping tax benefits, of course, they're also, I'm sure, taking names.
Yeah.
Technically, they have to take a business license. But again, because it hasn't been tested at the state level, and they know there is a large marijuana movement, let's face it, in the hearts and minds of people, whether they're in or out of the closet, and you know, a large percentage of them are still in the closet. Some of my best friends are afraid to come to my events and publicly support what I'm doing on the activist front as a hobby, which is becoming more and more a large part of my hobby life, rather. Looking into more of a life path. But the support is there in the hearts and minds of individuals.
Well, we'll have to keep an eye on Spokane and see how this shakes out. And I'm surprised that I haven't heard anything from the larger areas in the western parts of Washington, where you'd think there'd be even more hearts and minds on our side.
Well, and that's just it. And Seattle, being one of the most cosmopolitan cities in the world and being one of the more progressive with its local possession ordinance for 40 grams of adult possession being the lowest law enforcement priority, and its association with Norm Stamper of LEAP and now with Gil Kerlikowske, yeah, why isn't there dispensaries on, you know, at the foot of the Space Needle? I don't know. With Seattle Hempfest, you know, you get that much power. Maybe it's just too close to ground zero and the dispensaries just exploded out this way. I have no idea.
It's
interesting. We are an island out here, kind of in the middle of this eastern desert between Idaho and Montana and, parts like that. So it's very strange.
Yeah. We'll watch that for further developments. I'm looking forward to seeing how the dispensary movement grows there in eastern Washington.
I'll keep you posted. One of the dispensary owners is the Rainford City Council. Invited me and a couple of directors out for dinner tonight, and which is nice, our choice, right? So we'll listen to what he has to say, and of course, you know, he's definitely on our side. But running for city council to support marijuana laws and owning a dispensary, I don't know if that is, what is that? Is that a conflict of interest?
I don't know. I know there's a lot of city councilmen all over the country that are involved in, you know, ranching, farming, beer brewing,
exactly,
and so on.
Exactly.
So why not dispensary owners?
I'm happy to endorse them.
All right.
So, yeah.
Well, Kevin Oliver is the executive director of Inland Northwest Normal at innormal.org there in Spokane. And, oh gosh, what's the name of the valley you're in up there? The Palouse?
Well, I don't know. I guess. I don't know. Eastern Washington. is it a valley? I don't know.
See, I was trying to give some local cred from my days in Idaho and I blew it. Oh well.
All right. Yeah, we're about 30 miles east of, or west of Idaho and about 100 miles north of Oregon.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us here on The Stash again, Kevin. We'll talk to you again sometime.
Looking forward to it, Russ.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media.
As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our audio stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent.
We leave you today with some thoughts about adversity, working for marijuana law reform and ending adult marijuana prohibition is not going to be easy. You're going to face a lot of pressures from business and church leaders and people even in your own family and set of friends who may oppose what you're doing or not understand it. It's so hard sometimes to get the message out there because they'll approach us as if we're trying to advocate for something illegal. No, we're advocating for something that we're doing to not be illegal. There is a critical difference here. It's all about standing up and fighting for your rights, and no matter how down you might feel it sometimes, remember, that's what this country was founded on. Is people bravely standing up against impossible odds and fighting for freedom. Thanks for downloading the podcast. We'll be back tomorrow, as we are every day, with more news and interviews for you, the cannabis community. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.